two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. One, two, three, four, five, six.
2. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back from the GAC. Francisco, are you here? Is he? Oh, okay. Gabby, is Francisco online or who's chairing?
Francisco.
Me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, is that you, Francisco?
Yes.
Hi, it's Chris. How are you?
Fine, and you?
Very well, thank you. We've just come back into the room from the GAC session. Give us a couple of minutes, and then we'll start, if that's all right.
Okay, sure.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move into our next session, which is the IETF Data Escrow Initiative, and that's going to be a presentation by Francisco Arias for the GTLD Registry Technical Liaison. Francisco, I have the slide changer in my hand, so if you just tell me when you want to move on to the next slide, I'll be happy to arrange that for you.
Okay.
And please start when you're ready.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Hi, everyone. This will be a short presentation. This is Chris. Could you turn the next slide, please? Okay. Registry Data Escrow is something that has been done for the GTLD registries for several years. This is aimed at ensuring the registry continuity operations. For the new GTLD process, there was a new development. We were developing a new version of this registry data escrow specification, and during the Seoul meeting, people from the GTLD community suggested us to move this data escrow work to the IETF. We also consulted with other members of the community, including some people from CCTLDs, and we were given positive feedback about this idea. So we decided to move on with this. Would you turn to the next slide, please? So what is this effort in the IETF? This is exclusively on the technical point of view of the data escrow. The idea in the IETF is not to discuss anything besides the technical side of the data escrow. The idea is to produce a specification that allows a registry B to rebuild the services previously offered by registry A, another registry, with a minimal impact to registrars, registrants, and users. And we think this move to the IETF makes sense because the IETF is a technical forum where technical people normally feel more comfortable working with. And we think at the end we could have many more people participating here, technical people. And so at the end we will have a better specification as an end result. Next slide, please. So what is not this data store for in the IGF? This is not an invitation to do data escrow, but for those that already care about data escrow, we know that some CTLDs already do data escrow for themselves, at least JPRS, the JP, is doing, as far as I know. And we know that some others might be interested for different reasons. So if you care about data escrow, please join the support in the ITF. And also another clarification, there is no intention whatsoever to delay the new ETLD program waiting for this spec to be finished. We know the ITF and ICANN are different organizations, and we cannot depend on the work of the other. So if the specification is ready by the time it's needed in the new ETLD process inside ICANN, then it will be used. If not, we will have to see what to do, probably use the current version that is in the application guidebook, version 3, or maybe use the version that is the most advanced version at that time inside the ITF. We will have to figure that out at the time that is needed. Next slide, please. So the current status of this work is we already had a discussion list. There is an active mailing list. We have had several messages there. There will be a both in the ITF meeting in Anaheim, which is in 2 weeks from now. The BOF, by the way, is the name, in case you haven't heard this term, is the name that the ITF gives to a working group information, a working group that is still on the first phase of formation. This BOF has two experienced ITF co-chairs, Edward Lewis from Newstar, who probably people know because he was one of the co-chairs of the EPP the ITF working group that developed EPP inside the ITF. Also, the other co-chair is Jens Halvin, also an experienced ITFer that has been involved in many DNS working groups inside the ITF. At this moment, the discussion in the main list is focused on the scoping of the work. Please, next slide. In this mailing list, there are already people from GTLDs and CTLDs already participating. Some CTLDs, BGE, Switzerland, France, KP, Netherlands, UK, South Africa, and probably are more others subscribed there. I know of some others that are already there. So we expect to have formal consideration for this group to be a formal working group in the ITF. We expect this to happen after the Anaheim meeting. Please, next slide. So, if you are interested, this is the link to the mailing list. You can subscribe there. You can see also the mailing list archive. And, as I said, there will be a meeting for this both in 2 weeks, in Wednesday, March 24th, from 10:30 to 11:30. So, if you care about data stroke, please, join. You are more than welcome. I guess at this point, if you have any questions, I'm here. Please let me know.
Thank you, Francisco. Are there any questions or comments in the room for Francisco? Okay, no, Francisco, thank you very, very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you. See you.
Bye.
Okay, so the next session is the incident response plan working group. Jörg, you? Here he comes. And that will be followed at 4:30 by the delegation-redelegation working group report and discussion, and then the close of the meeting for the day. So your slides are already over there? Okay, so we should have some. You should have some slides. That would be great. That's the changer. You can see it here on the television.
Yeah, it's coming.
Oh, yeah.
To here, yeah. Yeah, good day. My name is Jörg Schweiger. I'm the CTO of .de, and I'm chairing the Incidents Response Working Group as well. So it's a pleasure to give you an update on the work in progress that has been made by the Incidents Response Working Group. First, a short overview what the purpose of the group really is, and that is due to a reason because we have been discussing that. So purpose is to implement mechanisms for the engagement of and the interaction with ccTLD registries during an incident. And such incidents for sure that do impact the DNS. So to be more precise, the scope of the Incidents Response Working Group would be to set up a repository of ccTLD contacts and a corresponding channels of communication for incidents response. And we are tasked to qualify what really is considered to be an incident, and we are supposed to describe some escalation procedures and action passes. Sorry, I should have advanced the slides here. So let's move on to the next one. Well, according to the charter, this is the work plan we came up with, and it consists of 4 points. First of all, we want to define what is considered to be an incident according to this working group. And we want to do that actually until March 10th. So there has been going on a lot of refinement on that issue, and we are pretty sure that we already had defined what is considered to be an incident quite good, and basically I'm just waiting for your input to make it a standing definition. Second point on the agenda would be to define use cases of how this contact repository is supposed to be used. And we want to specify that until April the 30th. Next thing would be to define escalation procedures and action passes. We want to do that by May 30th. And after we've done especially the latter 2 points, then we would be in a position to specify how the data model of this repository really is going to look like. So what we are heading for is that towards the Brussels meeting, we'll have defined the data model for the repository, and we know exactly how it's going to look. And finally, we would like to come up with suggestions on who actually will implement this repository. We want to specify and suggest who is running it, who is maintaining it. And if we do know all this, the second question would be at what expenditure this contact repository is supposed to be run. And I think that we are capable of suggesting a pretty good draft until a month later than Brussels. All right, then, let's get to a little bit of work we already had done. So the definition of an incident we came up with, and for sure this has got to be revised frequently, is as follows. So an incident is a systematic, rigorous preparation of or actual attack on, first, the availability of the DNS and registration systems, attack on the data integrity or privacy of the DNS or registration systems, attacks on the stability and security of the internet at large, and that is where a coordinated international response by operators or supporting organizations is advised. On the right-hand side of this slide, you see some attack vectors that refer to the bullet points on the left, just to give you an example. So, for example, for sure, the availability of the DNS is being attacked by a DDoS attack, and as we are all, or most of us, are using EPP as a protocol, so a flaw in the EPP protocol might be exploited towards the availability of a registration system. And what I do think is really interesting to see that we are not only focusing on the DNS, but we did include registration systems as well. Another point I will bring to your attention is that actually we started out with the definition giving just the first two bullet points, and then we've been discussing the third one as well, meaning this one. Because we felt that the first bullet points would not even cover configure. And at this working group kind of stems from the configure incident, we felt that we are in need to enlarge the definition a bit to cover any attack that might happen in the future. We don't even know what it's going to look like right now. So, said that, it is clear that the following is not to be considered an incident for the purpose of this working group, and that is the malicious use of the internet itself. So we are not talking about spam distribution. We are not concerned with the unlawful use or misuse of specific domains referring to content. And it's not our business if any routing problems occur with BGP or something else. Okay, this is as far as the results. There are some questions open as well, and I would really appreciate if the audience could comment on each of those questions, because it would really be lovely to get some guidance on that. So first thing would be that we weren't sure, or are not sure by now, about the sophistication level of this contact repository. So first of all, who's entitled to access? Are we in need of certain security measures and communication means that are really secure to access those repositories? And finally, the most important question, who's going to host this repository? Is this supposed to be hosted by a professional third party like TI, for example? Whereas TI, to those of you who are not familiar with the term, is a company that is already hosting a repository for the certs, and that may very well be adapted according to the needs of the contact repository for the incident response working group. Is this supposed to be run by a dedicated ICANN branch, and I'm thinking of the DNS cert that has been under discussion after the last at least couple of days. Or at the lower end of the possibilities may just be a simple IANA database extension. So are there any comments on that? Well, if not, so...
Yes, hello.
Robert.
My name is Robert Šiška. I'm technical manager of NIKIT here, but also happen to be the head of the Austrian CERT. So therefore, I know some of these procedures very well. May I comment on this? I'm very much in favor of having a very lean database structure there. Trusted Introduce is an excellent example of running an excellent infrastructure at actually no cost. And I think it's not right that it's really a company. It's more an effort of a joint effort of the teams there. I think an amendment to the existing IANA database would be fine enough. And regarding to the security issues, keeping the data confident or not, it's not so much about the confidence of the data. It's more about what kind of data do you really want to publish, and do you want to publish your secret emergency number and be waked up in the middle of the night? So that's all about it. So I think you could work with two levels of security, one for the public and one for emergency context, which you really want to keep secret in a way that is not triggered in atomic alarm in the middle of the night just by someone who is not happy with your service calling you. And one remark on this context, you mentioned DNS cert. What really puzzles me a little bit is that we now have an incident response working group, and you might know that CERT stands for Security Emergency Response Team. Sometimes CERT, in equivalent terms, stands for Security Incident Response Team. So the DNS CERT or CERT or whatever the name it might be seems to me a generic part of this incident working group, or the other way around. And while I think everybody seems to be in favor for initiatives helping to improve corporations and response to security threat, and so therefore I suggest that at least the incident response working group should take the task of collecting the various feedbacks from the community. I think everybody seems to be in favor to improve this cooperation, but the meaning of having it, what is inside the scope, what is outside of scope, how broad should this organization be set up, very lean, having really tasks on kind of hands-on experience, or do they only focus of communication? That really depends to whom do you talk. And I really suggest that this working group may take the cumbersome approach to collect all this input from the community and produce a kind of report on what kind of what does the community request, and what kind of service this search should deliver to the community?
Can I just suggest that on a logistical and process point, it's a very interesting point. What I think would need to happen is that the working group would need to come to the council. If the working group accepts that point and decides that it wants to do something, it then needs to come to the council with a proposal, and then we would consider that, and if we agreed, we would amend the working group charter. I think it's a very interesting suggestion, so if you guys want to kind of work on it and come back to us, that would be excellent.
Yeah, I just think we should not end up with two parallel working groups having the same topic inside even their name. That doesn't look very professional.
Thanks a lot, and I'm really going to follow up on that one.
Hello, it's Yuri Dymchenko. I'm not so tall. Okay. It's a bit repeat the comments and discussion at the security, ICANN security meeting was on Monday, that was discussed at the DNS CERT organization project. This major is CERT, and security response is a quite well-developed procedure and infrastructure in Europe. And actually, the Trusted Introducer, it's work only for Europe. It's a European project. So if you want to cover the whole world, you need to be extend more than Trusted TI, Trusted Introducer. And next, your definition of incident is quite good shaped for the DNS. But it's probably also should be aligned to the general definition of incident, like in RFC dictionary or a special a couple of RFC that published for the incident object description format. There is also incident object description format that implemented in particular by CERT in the United States and many CERT in Europe. So generally, it's there is a possibility to provide you more information about this. Okay, question is quite good. This only the comment. And
thanks you for the hint.
Yeah, your question for me. I think I saw in your definition of an incident that it explicitly stated that this was about attacks. And it seemed to include incidents as a result of human errors, for instance. And I asked that question because I think also there, this kind of a structure could help. In our recent center meeting, we had a presentation by one of the European registries who some time ago published a corrupt zone file. And in order to minimize the consequences of that action, they had to get in touch with all kinds of parties in other countries.
Sure.
And they didn't have their phone numbers or fax numbers or telephone numbers. So I think that is also some kind of an incident, which is not the consequence of an attack, but where a structure like this one could help.
Agree.
Can I read the definition of this incident from RFC 3067? This is an incident is an, a security event.
Line is closed, by the way.
Yeah. It's a, the essential issue is an event. But this event may be either one incident or serial of incident. So
true.
Maybe it will also go to...
Okay.
Hi, Simon McCullough, Nominate UK. Quick question. Regards to the fact that there's all these working groups that are currently trying to define similar ground to this, is there work that the incident response group could be doing now that works in the informal structures we already have in terms of mitigating attacks, in terms of just having circulating contact details and having a really immediate impact?
I'm not sure whether I got your question completely right. If you're referring to in which way are we interacting with the groups that are really in place right now, to be honest, this is actually the third point on the last slide. There's clearly, and I do feel the same, there's clearly a need that we do have to consult, that we do have to relate, and that we do have to clear on any or with any of those groups who are currently around. And if you would like to take a look at the slide, you see that the slide is providing what I think is a pretty comprehensive list. So the answer is we are on our way to do so.
Okay, thanks.
I hope it works, yeah. The incident response group met on Saturday, and one of the outcomes was that the CCNSO website will include a link to all these different types of organizations so that at least it is clear which organizations exist or are currently in existence. And as Jörg said, it is not to overdo or the work of others.
Could you thank you, Jörg. Could you join me in thanking Jörg for his presentation?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so Keith, Becky, if I could get you guys up. The last session is the today, because I don't know what it's like down there, but I can tell you it's very hot up here. The last session today is the delegation-redelegation working group. You've all had a copy of the progress report, I hope, and many of you, some of you, were actually at the workshop on the Sunday when we talked about experiences. But the Delegation or delegation working group is chaired by Keith, and Becky is the vice chair. So over to them to take us through what they need to take us through.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and it's really great to be the last session on a warm afternoon. So I think those who want to have a snooze, they probably better leave the room, because this is going to be a fairly exciting session. can I, or Gabby, oh, thank you, Gabby, you're already there. Can I take the liberty of just running through the slides that we presented at the workshop the other day? And can I also apologise to anyone who's been through this discussion just before in the GAC and at the workshop itself? Sorry for the repetition. These were the slides for the workshop rather than for this, so I'll just run through the important points. The workshop that we ran, just incidentally, was to assist the working group in understanding issues and experiences of others relating to delegations and redelegations that had occurred. Clearly not, though, to get involved in any individual case of a delegation or redelegation or relitigate any earlier decision. And our work is focused on overarching policies and procedures. Next slide, Gabby. Now, just to cover off the working group, it is a working group established by the CCNSO Council. It's tasked to compare policies and guidelines with IANA procedures and discuss issues with CCNSO members. It will report finally back to the CCNSO on any aspects that may require a PDP. Next slide. The working group will report back to the CCNSO on three separate aspects over the next year. We decided to start with what we thought was the easiest, delegations, proceeding through retirements, and then finally redelegations, which we thought was going to be the hardest part. However, there has been overlapping discussions in the discussions the working group's had to date, and it's not possible to fully isolate them into separate streams of work. And we're already behind schedule in, as the delegations report was due at this meeting, and now hopefully in Brussels. Next slide. Part of the work that we've done, we commenced a review of the policies and guidelines, in particular RFC 1591, ICP1 and the GAC principles, and within the working group I think it would be fair to say that there's no perceived significant difference between these individual policies. We matrixed them and looked at each of the policy statements line by line, and while there are slight differences, there hasn't been anything of significant concern to anyone in the working group. Next slide. And the working group is currently researching ICANN board decisions on delegations, retirements and redelegations, and our next set of work will be to compare those decisions and their alignment with the policies and guidelines. And we are meeting iteratively. We meet up to twice a month, and we never make a decision at a single meeting. It must go through two iterations due to the high numbers of people on the working group to give everybody an opportunity to participate in a reasonably friendly time. And we've had a working group meeting here in Nairobi, and also the subject did come up in the GAC session for some discussion. Probably the biggest issue for those who were not in the GAC was the GAC having some concern that the ICANN board perhaps didn't think that the GAC principles on the delegation and redelegations of country codes was formally received by the board. And there's a link to the working group documents. There has been a progress report published. I think that ends my presentation, and Becky Burr provided a very useful background on the IANA function and the history of IANA's development to the workshop. So I've invited her to give that presentation again, just to help round out the knowledge. And after Becky's presentation, we really just want to open this up for open discussion. Thank you.
I'm going to apologize for a busy slide. I know you're not supposed to put this many words on one slide, but most of it is just background information. In the working group, we've been discussing sort of the origins of the policy or the practices regarding CCTLD delegation, so I thought it might be useful for all of us to reflect on that. In the 1960s, the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, known as DARPA, funded first UCLA and then later the University of Southern California, where John Postel was doing postgraduate work, to maintain a list of host names and addresses, and eventually these functions came to include responsibility for parameter allocations, IP addresses, the like, and over time became known, the functions became known as IANA. There was never a standalone entity or organization. In 1983, Paul Makapetris and John Postel developed the DNS. He delegated .us, Postel delegated .us, .uk, and .il in 1985. And then between 1985 and 1993, others were delegated on a first-come, first-served basis, and largely to people that John Postel personally knew in universities around the world, but in cases where there were not universities, he delegated them based on his views about who would provide service to the relevant community. In 1994, he published RFC 1591 to articulate, describe the manner in which CCTLDs were delegated and the principles on which they were delegated and the expectations for CCTLD managers and indeed TLD managers. In 1998, following recognition of ICANN by the U.S. Department of Commerce, the IANA functions that were at that point still being provided, undertaken by the University of Southern California, were intended to be transferred to ICANN. Because USC was working and developed various intellectual property under a U.S. government procurement, they had the need for some certain formalities in transferring that intellectual property, which is why the IANA functions contract came into existence. It really was never intended to be sort of two separate functions. To be clear, the activities are quite intimately related in our view, or in my view anyway. Next slide, Gabby. So the RFC 1591 principles, which is really, you know, whether it's a policy or anything else, it's the authoritative text under which we live, and has a special place, at least in my heart, and I think in others. The principles were fairly straightforward. John's view was managers had to be fair, just, honest, and competent, that managers of CCs would be trustees for the delegated domain with a duty to serve the community. He specifically said concerns about rights and ownership are inappropriate. CCTLD managers should be concerned about their responsibilities in serving the community. There was a provision that required managers to be equitable to groups that were permitted to register in the domain, not that everybody had to be permitted, but that whatever the rules were, they had to be administered fairly. he said that significantly interested parties in the domain should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party, and the government of the relevant country or territory was a significantly interested party among others. The basic requirement was that the designated manager was required to do a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain. Gabby, next slide. The other thing that I think it's really important to keep in mind is that John had a list of things that were driving him when he put 1591 together, although this slide is largely derived from an RFC that was drafted by John Clenson some years later, I spoke with John about it and was impressed by the wisdom of his, you know, here are the death traps, things to avoid. His goal was to never get involved with determining which entities were countries and which ones were not, and so he picked the ISO 3166 list. May not have been a perfect list, but he just wanted an authoritative text. He did not want to be involved in determining who was or was not the legitimate government of a country, and he didn't want to be involved in prioritizing rights within the government. He wanted, he wanted disputes regarding delegation and operation of CCTLDs to be resolved in country, and that is why there was a requirement that all CCTLD delegations had at least one manager who resided in the country. I know that there have been some exceptions in the margins there, but his view was that if there was somebody subject to the jurisdiction of the relevant government or territory, then the relevant government or territory had the rights and authority under whatever rule of law prevailed in that government or territory to reach a solution with the CCTLD operator. So when disputes arose, John's direction was essentially to tell the parties to the dispute to go away and solve the problem and come back when they had resolved it. So that's the in terms of documentation, that is our starting point. We are looking to document the history of the delegations, and to the extent that any of you out there have history, have correspondence with John, we would love to have it, because we would like to compile a sort of historical record, both for purposes of doing our work and also for purposes of history.
Thank you. Becky, and I think when Becky refers to old documentation, I think probably mostly pre-1990. So if any of you have any records relating to a delegation or redelegation prior to 1990, even if it's just email exchanges, we would very much like to hear from you, and perhaps not necessarily here and now, but if you contact Becky or myself after the session. I think in terms of RFC 1591, thank you, Becky, it's a very good clarification, and of course 1591 refers to more than just the operation of CCTLDs. But as the principles of that you've raised that relate to CCTLDs go, I'd just like to people to think about it for a few minutes, and if you have any issues, disputes, or items that you don't feel comfortable with in RFC 1591, to just come to the microphone and let us know what you perceive as a problem with that document. Other than that, I think, Chris, do you want to provoke the audience into some participation before they all go to sleep?
I have a feeling that this audience is beyond provocation. I think that we've basically delivered the message from the working group. We've asked for any documents that people have. I don't really think there's anything else. If anybody wants to ask a question, okay, go ahead.
I just want to one observation. First question: how is working group consider the GAC principles? Because from my experience and knowledge, this is more structured approach, and it clarifies something that is not well defined in the BCP and RFC.
So the key question there is not really how the working group perceives the GAC principles, but more how the GAC principles are perceived by perhaps the board of ICANN and the GAC themselves, because that feeds into a discussion about what documents are actually out there. The GAC principles, the 2006 GAC principles, are an official GAC advice to the board, and that document has a certain weight in the ICANN bylaws, and that's basically a fact. So that's the way it is. The GAC principles are actually often quite useful document because they are written in a way that enables argument about certain points, but they are my understanding, and I think the understanding of the working group is that the GAC principles are official advice to the board.
Okay, but actually, at least in known to me case of redelegation still ongoing more than 10 years for .ua domain, Ukraine.
I'm going to stop you. We will not discuss individual delegations because it's just not appropriate to do so in a sort of public environment like this. So if you want to talk about something specific to do with a redelegation, then you really need to not do that here. Okay.
I'm not talking about redelegation, asking the decision or opinion. I simply know that there is a big gap between practice that is provided by or conducted by IANA according to BCP and RFC and GAC principles. So for this case particularly, GAC principles provide a more structured approach of defining relation of government to the defining who is organization, and this should be also in this document. At least it's a case where we have a kind of a number of problems. Why is process last for 10 years? I'm not talking why, because I know some kind of, as Chris asked, but still this should be reflected in the review or recommendation of the policies.
Thank you for that. This was the very subject of the workshop that we ran the other day, and so it's rather unfortunate you didn't see the information on the CCTLD lists and so on, because that would have been a perfect opportunity for you to make a presentation. The working group will take that into account, and we may run another workshop at a future ICANN meeting. I think information about an individual delegation or redelegation is useful to the working group, not that it can act on it. It's out of our scope to act, but it is useful information, particularly if you can provide definitive examples of what you believe to be a gap between the policies and the practice. So that can help our overall work, but it can't help your individual instance.
Yes, surely. We are not pretending, and I'm not pretending people
who
want.
No, I understand.
So if I will have opportunity to provide individual way or to the mailing list, this will be this best effort, abstract and...
The quickest way to do it right now is simply to provide it to Keith. If you do that, then we can take it into the working group and go from there, all right?
Okay.
That's the quickest way.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Are we done?
just a clarification back from Bernie Turcott, who's our contracted ICANN staff support for this working group. I said we're looking for old documentation pre-1990. He's quite happy to take any documentation pre-2000, but with a particular focus on pre-1990. Keep that in mind if you have a good email archive. If there's no other questions, are there any questions or observations relating to the working group in general and where it's heading?
Okay. Thank you, Keith. Thank you, Becky. Two bits of logistics. Tickets, if you are registered for the CCTLD dinner, if you are registered already, if you're not, sorry, too late. If you're registered and you haven't got a ticket, you need to see Gabby. Secondly, Gabby, in her usual way and efficient way, has published a survey for us to fill in. It's best if you do it today, because otherwise you'll forget, and then again tomorrow for tomorrow. And finally, we start again at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. The schedule originally said 9:15. We've changed it back to 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock in the Shimba Hills Room, S-H-I-M-B-A, Hills Room, which is on the first floor of this building. And other than that, I'd like to thank everybody for their attention today. I'd like to thank the brass band for providing us with the music. And I hope to see you all again later. Thank you.
Prayers tonight. Did you take the time? Can you come and stand close by me? Listen while I say mine. See that little house over on the hill, with one candle burning. That's just the way I feel. I just want small light to